Representative Pro and his colleagues for organizing this event and for standing with our Afghan friends and allies at this very difficult moment. We've all been watching the tragic and horrific situation unfolding in Afghanistan, and there will be plenty of time to assess how this happened and what went wrong. But our focus today and in the days ahead needs to be squarely on saving lives. In the 20 years that the United States and our partners have been in Afghanistan, a new generation of Afghan leaders has stepped forward to help chart a better future for the country. Their ranks include women's rights activists, independent journalists, anti-corruption crusaders, and democracy advocates. Most of these people did not work directly for the US government or for our NATO allies, but their lives are now imperiled by the Taliban's advance, and they need to be evacuated from the country before it's too late. The United States has a moral responsibility and a national security interest in ensuring the protection of these Afghan allies, as well as those who directly supported our military mission. I know the Biden administration recognizes this responsibility. American diplomats and military personnel are working around the clock to secure the Kabul airport and implement the safe and orderly evacuation that the president has directed. This is obviously not a simple undertaking. It requires a Herculean effort, not only by our forces on the ground, but by the entire US government, including both the executive and legislative branches. The commitment and support of Congress has been and will continue to be essential to seeing this mission through, as has the active involvement of many NGOs which are represented on this call today. We will also need the support and assistance of other countries which are stepping forward to provide temporary hosting and transit. And I especially want to recognize our friends in Canada and the Balkans, including Albania, Kosovo, and North Macedonia, for their generosity and willingness to help. I hope and expect other countries, including the United States and the major Western powers, to do their part. Let me just say that even as we work to evacuate those whose lives are directly imperiled by the Taliban, we cannot forget the millions of Afghans, especially women, who risk losing the considerable gains made over two decades of sacrifice. Going forward, the protection of Afghan women must be a top priority, and I will do my part to ensure that it remains at the center of the international agenda. Thank you again, Congressman Pro, for what you are doing and with your colleagues. Thank you for inviting me to speak.
Thank you, Secretary Albright. We appreciate your voice, your wisdom, your counsel, and your leadership as always. I would like to begin just by making a couple of comments and addressing groups that are of incredible importance to us right now. One, to the Afghan people, to our partners, to our allies, to those who stood shoulder to shoulder with us over the last 20 years. We see you. We hear you. You have many friends in the United States, and we will continue to fight for you and bring you to safety with your families. That is a promise that we will make. You have many allies, and that's why we are here today. I also want to address my fellow veterans. This is a challenging time for U.S. combat veterans as we grapple with the meaning of the last 20 years and your service and your sacrifice. And I want to make something very clear. Your service, your sacrifice was honorable. You stood up, you raised your right hand, and you served your country when you were called to do so. And you should be proud of that because we are proud of that. You made a difference in the lives of many people. You saved your brothers and sisters that you stood shoulder to shoulder with, and you will always and should always be proud of that service. That's always different from the political debates, the policy debates that will happen and have happened, but your individual service was done with dignity, and for that, we are very grateful. As Secretary Albright said, there's going to be time to have the debate about the missteps and the mistakes of the last 20 years, and there were many, We will have that discussion. We will figure out as a nation, as members of Congress, as a community, what went wrong and how to do it. And certainly the mistakes of the last couple of weeks and the last couple of days as this very tragic scene unfolds at Kabul International Airport and around the country. But we are here today with a very simple message, and that is keep Kabul Airport open. Send in the combat power and the troops that are necessary to secure that airport and keep it open as long as we possibly can. We have the means, we have the ability, we are the United States of America. We can do this, and we can get thousands and thousands of people out. But we must have the will. That is our simple message. And it's a message that you're going to hear repeatedly from my friends and my allies on this call today, starting with my friend Michael Waltz, a former Green Beret, a combat veteran of Afghanistan from Florida. Mike, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. I just want to first off echo exactly
recording in progress
what you're saying, that to our fellow veterans, to our Gold Star families, to the Afghan families who are so worried, sick right now about their relatives, 9/11 victims, everyone who sacrificed so much in Afghanistan in the last 20 years for freedom and for democracy, your sacrifices were not in vain. Many of us are struggling with what's going on, and that is understandable. But you are not alone. And if you are going to a very dark place, please reach out and get help and speak to someone. This is devastating, as we've said. It's devastating from a human rights perspective. It's devastating for American credibility. Our adversaries and other allies around the world are watching, and I think scratching their head, if not terrified, about American resolve. And it's devastating, I think, for future American security as we head into the 20th anniversary of 9/11, with the Taliban flag flying over Kabul, soon to be joined by Al-Qaeda 3.0, which I fear will be far worse. But here nor there, Representative Crow is right. We will have those debates, and I pray we have some accountability for this calamity. Today, now, I hope to see a number of things. Number one, the State Department cannot be in the position of giving people a death sentence over typos and the wrong forms. That the very documentation that people need to prove that they stood with us is documentation that will get them killed if found in their home or found with it on at a Taliban checkpoint. I've personally had that happen to one of my own interpreters who was not just executed. He was taken back to his home and beheaded in front of his family and alongside his brothers and cousins. That's the brutality that we're dealing with and what's at stake. I'm sure all of us who have been so engaged are overwhelmed with pleas and requests from terrified Afghans who stood with us bravely and publicly and have now been left behind. And I know we're all doing whatever we can to help them. But the State Department must continue to streamline this process. The Defense Department, I'm calling on the president to authorize them to create safe zones and communicate those zones very quickly and to give the military on the ground the authority that if people cannot get to those safe zones, to go get them. We should have never pulled our military assets out. Representative Crow and I, in a bipartisan, bicameral fashion, have been saying for months now that when the last American boot went wheels up, that we were handing these people a death sentence. The boots are now back, and I hope we can correct those errors. And then finally, I think we need a very clear message to the Taliban and any country that would seek to recognize this brutal regime that took Afghanistan by force, not by negotiation and not through diplomacy and not by agreement, that their brutality will not be tolerated. Their marriage with Al-Qaeda that seeks to attack the West again will not be tolerated. And it's just phenomenally frustrating. But I want to thank you, Jason, for continuing the stand. And I, for one, am certainly willing to do whatever it takes to get those out that helped us. We need a clear policy, finally, sorry, for how long this air bridge will be open, how many will get out. And then the final piece is the P1, P2 program. I certainly welcome it, but some of the requirements to get to third countries are just not realistic. There are a number of steps we can make to be far more helpful in line with what we did for the South Vietnamese and for other allies. Get them out now. We have a moral and national security obligation. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mike. That was Representative Waltz from Florida. Next, we're going to go to my friend, Tom Malinowski from New Jersey.
Thank you, Representative Crow, for your leadership on this over the last several months. Thank you, Representative Waltz, for being consistent on Afghanistan, no matter who is in the White House. We all agree here that we have a moral and strategic obligation to help the Afghans who helped us and to help the Afghans who bet their lives on the future that America promised them. The good news is that the administration has accepted that in principle. They have committed themselves to the broadest possible evacuation of people in several categories. First and foremost, obviously, American citizens and those who worked for our various missions in Afghanistan. That has to come first. We all acknowledge that. Second, those eligible for the SIV visas, the Afghans who directly aided our military effort in the country. And third, a broader category of Afghans who are at risk of retribution from the Taliban, everything from women's rights and human rights leaders and journalists and people who were students or faculty at the American University in Afghanistan, many others. Now that commitment has to be operationalized. It's not enough just to make it on paper. And to operationalize it, as others have said, first and foremost, we have to fully secure the airport. And second, we have to enable the Afghans who are on our list for evacuation to come to the airport as soon as possible so that they can stage there for as long as it takes before flights can come to pick them up. And if that requires having tents, if that requires MREs, if that requires having a very large number of people on the airport compound for days or weeks, then so be it. Certainly it will require American troops, more troops than we had before President Biden made this decision. Let the irony of that sink in, but that is what is required right now. The reason for this, the reason why we need them to at the airport now, is because with every passing hour, it is going to become harder for Afghans on our list for evacuation to get to the airport safely. This morning, I heard about a group of Afghan women, including a woman who was on the government's peace delegation in Doha, viciously beaten by the Taliban near the airport. As others have pointed out, these people are not going to be able to come to the airport with their passports and their IDs and their application documents for visas. We are going to have to identify them probably based on their telephone numbers. The good news is the State Department has their telephone numbers. They have a list of people who need to be evacuated. We need to start calling those people the moment the airport is secure and bring them there. And then, as others have pointed out, make a clear public commitment that we will hold that airport for as long as it takes. The question here is whether this is going to be Saigon or Dunkirk. Are we going to leave people behind as we did in South Vietnam, or are we going to hold the beach until everybody is taken off that beach? I hope that it's the latter, and that from that moment, we can begin to rebuild some semblance of American support for the idea that Afghanistan can be a freer and better place and not a haven for people who wish to attack the United States of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Malinowski. Next, we're gonna go to my friend, Representative Peter Meyer from Michigan. Peter.
Thank you, Jason, for your leadership on this. Thank you, Mike, for those remarks, and Tom as well. I could not agree more with everybody here. the first and foremost priority is securing Kabul airfield. It is getting the American citizens who are there, getting the Afghan nationals who loyally serve this country out to a safe place. This is an incredibly tense situation. I've been in communication with folks who are at the airfield on both sides, on the civilian side, on the military side. It is a powder keg. We need to be doing everything we can, as our forces who are there are doing, to secure that airfield, to hold it, but also to work through that backlog. You know, as a military veteran, as somebody who lived and worked in Afghanistan for a humanitarian aid organization, I know, and those of us who served over there know, journalists who were in Afghanistan and used interpreters or local fixers, we all have friends and colleagues who are there and are trapped and are talking to, and they are moving around from house to house with their families, trying to avoid getting hunted down by the Taliban. I know for some, this may be an abstraction. You see a glaring, jarring image that is moving, or it's an idea of a tragedy far away that maybe tugs at the heartstrings. But for tens of thousands of Americans, for probably over 100,000 Americans, I mean, this tragedy has a face, it has a name, and those faces and names are Afghans who have families who are at risk. So we need to be doing everything we can. I don't think there is any disagreement here that Congress is willing to help in any way possible to make sure that this administration holds Kabul airfield, provides our forces with the support that they need, and make sure that we do not end this mission early, that we stay to make sure we fulfill the promises made to those Afghans who supported us, that we ensure we leave taking care of those who stuck their necks out for us. And if anything else, any other conclusion rather than one that keeps our allies safe will be a dark and shameful moment in this country's history. So I'm proud of the bipartisan effort that we have. I'm proud of the work that we did to get legislative solutions around SIVs. Now it's an operational challenge. And to the extent that there is a legislative solution, we stand ready. But otherwise, we need to hold that airfield and we need to get people to safety. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Next, we will go to former Congressman Jim Colby from Arizona and currently a board member of the International Republican Institute. Jim, over to you.
Thank you, Representative Crow, and thanks to all the others that have joined on this call to talk about what a very important principle and a very important thing that the United States has to do to meet its commitments to the people that helped us in Vietnam. I have a real sense of deja vu about all this because I was very deeply involved in Operation Orphan Airlift from Saigon, where we were trying to evacuate thousands or hundreds of orphans that had been processed for adoption in the United States, but paperwork hadn't been finished. And it was a helter-skelter operation. And I certainly hope that we are able to here to stay at the airport and to retain control long enough to get the people out that we need to get out. I want to emphasize particularly that there are others that perhaps we haven't been thinking about, and those are people that work for the NGOs like National Democratic Institute, International Republican Institute, and others that are represented on this call today. These people are not initially on the list of people to be taken out. Many of them have been told if they get out of the country, they can process their visas later. But there isn't time to be later. We have to get these people out. They served us in the same way that the interpreters served us, those that worked as contractors for the United States agencies and for the military. They served us in the same way, helping promote democracy and freedom in their own country. And they deserve to be protected in this time of need. So I hope that we will be thinking not only of those who directly work for the United States government, but those who work for all the organizations who are trying to build a greater and better Afghanistan, which I know we all hope will be there in the future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jim. We couldn't agree more, and we appreciate your continued leadership. Next, we're going to go to Rai Barkat, co-founder of the With Honor organization and a Marine combat veteran. Rai.
Thanks, Representative Crow, and good to be on with all of you. With Honor, as many of you know, works with principled veterans from both parties who serve in the four-country caucus, including Representatives Crow, Meyer, and Waltz, who are on this call. And you know, we support the agenda that these veterans identify matter for the country. And right towards the beginning of this year, this issue of protecting our allies in Afghanistan, including our interpreters and other allies, was identified. And I got to say, 3 weeks ago, for the first time, I was starting to feel more optimistic because we saw one of the largest bipartisan votes in Congress in recent years, led by Representative Crow, with Meyer, Waltz, Representative Malinowski was on it, 407 votes to 16 to pass the Allies Act. We then saw the beginning of the first evacuation of what's to be up to 2,500 Afghan allies. Well, now we have over 50,000 who are in Kabul. And we, as With Honor, will continue to convene and lead veteran service organizations and humanitarian organizations and call for the U.S. government and the administration to do everything in our power, not only to protect the Americans, and there are thousands of American citizens in Kabul, but to also honor our promises, honor our commitments to our Afghan allies. And that's our main message for today. We're doing everything in our power. I encourage anyone that has the means to also think about the long tail of this. There will be thousands of Afghan families who need support. I'm so encouraged to see the commitment by the Open Society Institute, which I believe we'll hear from next. I also see No One Left Behind, which has been part of this coalition that we've built to support Representative Crow and others with our veteran service organizations and our humanitarian organizations. No One Left Behind is an organization that's doing really important work to help settle our Afghan families. If you have the means to contribute, please think about them and other organizations. Congressman Crow, thank you.
Thank you, Rye. I appreciate your leadership and continued service. And yes, we are going to go to Tom Perriello next, the Executive Director of Open Society US. Tom.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Representative Crow, and to all of you, including my former colleague, Representative Welch, who's been such a great advocate for humanitarian work and veterans. For all of us who were able to spend time with the Afghan people over the last 20 years or before, we know that the warlords and the kleptocrats do not represent the real culture, real people. It's a people of committed to democracy, to human rights. It's a people that inspired us, that protected us. And to be honest, they're living heroes, but they're not going to be living for long if we do not act today. We are talking about the people that stepped up to advance democracy, human rights, to stand up against some of the most corrupt and vicious figures on the planet. They did it as allies with us, but allies of a universal mission that we at our best stand for. They are living today, and what we do in the next two or three days, the next two or three weeks, will determine whether they live to see this and help potentially write a new chapter for Afghanistan somewhere down the road. The asks are simple: keep the airport open. Keep it open not just for the evacuation of American citizens, which is of course a priority, but for all commercial flights, chartered flights, any effort, philanthropic like ours, military or otherwise, to get out as many people as we can, an effort to prioritize those who've taken the greatest risk through their work directly with the US government and standing up for women's rights, human rights, and democracy. The airport must stay open until all efforts to evacuate Afghan civilians and our allies are out. We must continue to pressure allies around the world and ourselves to accept more refugees and to not get stuck on the paperwork, as so many of these representatives of mission have mentioned. Our mission in Afghanistan was to go after those who threatened our security, but it was also a mission based on the idea that certain values were universal, like the desire for human rights and democracy. That same idea of a universal humanity is at stake. Do you or do you not use every bit of force you have in order to protect the lives of innocent and vulnerable people? Many on this call wore the uniform to protect those values. Many didn't wear the uniform, but fought in their own way with unbelievable courage. This is a test for us of our country's mission and our credibility now and in the future. But most importantly, this is one of those rare days where we can talk about saving lives and mean it without hyperbole. This is a chance to do the right thing. We need to use what we can to keep the airport open, to do everything we can to protect those who need to get to the airport and get out. And we appreciate all of those, including Representative Crow and others, for their leadership and asking that of this government right now, our government. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Next, we will go to Sunil Varghese, Policy Director for the International Refugee Assistance Project. Sunil, over to you.
Thank you, Representative Crow, and thank you to everyone that's joined us here. This is quite a tragedy and unavoidable catastrophe, but I guess, you know, what I want to make clear is that it is not too late, that as folks have said, we need to keep the airport open, not just for military flights, but troops need to secure the civilian side of the airport so that we can get more commercial flights out to amplify efforts to get both Americans and Afghans out. We serve together and we should be able to leave together. The International Refugee Assistance Project, IRAP, where I work, is, I believe, the only legal organization providing no-cost legal representation for SIV applicants. We've been working with SIVs in Afghanistan for the better part of a decade. In 2016, we won a lawsuit against the government where a court decided that the SIV process was unreasonably delayed. But at this point, it is too late for processing, and we need to get more Afghans on flights. And importantly, we need those Afghans to get onto flights to the United States. The, DOD, the Defense Department, in April and May signaled the ability to evacuate Afghans to the United States, but they were not given the order. It is our understanding over the last hour that DOD has approved a request to bring Afghans into bases in the U.S., and we really need that to be robust. And
recording in progress.
So I just want to leave you with that. We're, you know, like many, we're receiving frantic text messages from our clients every hour. More than a month ago, they were unable to get to Kabul. Now those that are in Kabul are unsure if they can safely get to the airport or not. Folks that had received evacuation letters are now being told that those flights are being canceled. There is a lot to do tomorrow and the day after, but immediately we need more flights out of the airport, and we need those flights to have Afghans coming to the United States.
Thank you, Sunil. Thank you for your leadership and your work. Next, we will go to Doug Livermore, a board member for No One Left Behind. Doug.
Thank you, Representative Crow, and everyone else that could be on this call today. As mentioned, I'm here today representing No One Left Behind. We're established in 2013. No One Left Behind has been the one organization solely focused on special immigrant visas, although historically we've been focused on two main efforts, one being the reformation of the actual SIV process itself. As was already discussed, it has been long, laborious, and very, very bureaucratic in nature, leading to all sorts of unfair delays and rejections. Additionally, No One Left Behind has been working for many years to provide resettlement and financial support to Afghan and Iraqi SIVs and their families once they reach the United States. However, over about the last year, starting in January of 2020, No One Left Behind has been focusing a lot of its recommendations and efforts on evacuation, on the need for evacuations, particularly of our Afghan interpreters and their families. That said, you know, we are very, very thankful for all the bipartisan support we've been receiving in our discussions with Congress. Additionally, we've been working with the last three administrations, presidential administrations, to push for reforms and streamlining of the process. Admittedly, there's still a lot of work to go. And kind of echoing what's already been said here before, we are very sorry to see us arrive at this tragedy we're at today. Particularly in the last several weeks, through our efforts to support evacuations, No One Left Behind was providing funds from our very generous donors to purchase commercial airline tickets for Afghan SIVs and their families that were already approved so they could come to the United States. Additionally, we were providing legal support and interpreter support for the last group of SIVs that were evacuated to Fort Lee. And we were really hoping that that was going to become the model. And we feel that that should become, or that should be the continuing model for how the United States government fulfills its obligations to our Afghan SIVs and their families. So just to really quickly echo a lot of what was already said before, what's first and foremost, what we see as most important based on our conversations is the security of the airport. We're receiving, over the last several days, we fielded untold thousands of phone calls and texts and emails from Afghans who are absolutely terrified, stuck between the barred gates of Kabul International Airport and Taliban that are circling the entire facility. It's imperative that our forces, both NATO and American, when they get on the ground, do everything they can to secure and push back the Taliban checkpoints and perimeter. Additionally, as was already said, it's vitally important that we do everything in our power to maintain access to the airport, maintain that air bridge, the air pipeline upon which we're so committed to ensure the safe evacuation of not just the SIVs, but all of the Afghans that are in danger who have worked alongside the United States for so long. And then again, echoing what's been said before, there is both a moral imperative when Congress first passed the SIV law that was making a commitment to both the Afghan and the Iraqi SIVs that this was something that for their honorable service alongside our forces, we would take care of them. And that has also already been said, the national security imperative of ensuring that we follow through with these obligations, because not just the Afghans are watching. As we see, there's been so much conversation in the global sphere about what it means to be an ally of the United States. So our honor is absolutely at stake, but so is our national security. And then I'll just conclude by saying that in the last several weeks we've seen, or months, we've seen a lot of progress as the State Department and DOD ramped up their efforts to assist with the SIVs and other Afghan visa programs, particularly as you saw the surging of State Department personnel to Kabul and State Maine. But we really, if we're going to save as many of our Afghan allies as possible, this will seriously, to go back to the Dunkirk analogy, require all hands on deck for as long as it takes to get everyone out. Thank you again for your time, and really appreciate the support.
Thank you, Doug. We appreciate your leadership and your work and for joining us today. I want to take a moment and recognize a few folks who are joining me in person here in Colorado. I have Jennifer Wilson, the Executive Director of the International Rescue Committee of Denver, Sohila Pariyar, and Ashapula Sharifi, Afghan SIV recipients. We have Terry Clinton with the American Legion of Colorado, Barbara Green, the State Commander of the VFW of Colorado, and Steve Shawness, the Colorado Legislative Director, past State Commander as well. Thank you for all of your leadership. So our message is very simple, and I want to thank everybody who joined us, and that is send the troops in and the resources and the combat power necessary to secure the airport and to secure it as long as is necessary to get the job done and to get American citizens out and to get our friends and partners out. There is a bipartisan coalition behind that. The American people are behind that because they know it's the moral thing to do. They know it's the right thing to do. And they also know that it's in a U.S. national security interest to do it as well. That is our message. That is simple. We will continue to work night and day for that mission. When I became an Army Ranger, I had to recite the Ranger Creed. And there's a stanza of that Ranger Creed that says, "I will never leave a fallen comrade to fall into the hands of the enemy." That was a lifetime promise. And I mean it, and it applies to our soldiers, it applies to American citizens who are currently in Afghanistan, and it applies to our Afghan friends and partners as well. So with that, we're going to take a couple of minutes here. I think we have about 10 or 15 minutes to take questions from folks. And Meg Spencer and my team is going to be monitoring. I think if you raise your hand, she will put you in the queue. Meg?
For all folks that are tuning in virtually and for press, if you want to leave your comment in the Q&A section, we're happy to get you queued up. We'll give everyone a couple of minutes to get that started.
While we're doing that, while we're queuing it up, my friend Peter Welch is on the line, and I would like to give him just a minute to make some comments because Peter has been a champion. Walking his footsteps. So Peter, if you have a couple of comments we're waiting for.
Well, thank you.
We would love to hear from you.
You know, this all boils down to the Ranger Creed. I mean, the question for the United States of America, it's very straightforward, it's very simple, and it's this. Will the United States of America abandon the people who helped our soldiers, our diplomats, our citizens, or will it come to their aid and assistance? That's our obligation. It's simple, it's straightforward, but by any means possible, by every means possible, we must, as a country, do everything we can to save all of those interpreters, all of those assistants, all of those women who helped our soldiers and helped the United States. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Representative Welch.
And just for those who are participating in the Q&A, if you can include your outlet as well, that'll be helpful for making sure we get the right answers to the right folks.
Okay, so Meg just said, for those who are asking questions or in the queue, if you could include your outlet as well.
All righty. So our first question is going to be about, 1 moment, please. From the Wall Street Journal, we have, how many planes, do we have any information on how many planes could be flying into Afghanistan for P2s and people with SIV status if the airfields were secured? If anyone would like to talk on that, and is the carrying capacity for each of those planes, if anyone has specifics, or if that's, we're able to talk about that.
I do not, for that question from the Wall Street Journal, I don't know if folks were able to hear Meg repeating the question, but the question was about the number of planes and the carrying capacity of those planes. I do not have that information, that level of operational detail. I've not been provided that, but I don't know if anybody has more information than I do.
I can speak to that quickly, Representative. There are a range of planes and sizes. It depends largely, first and foremost, on what is permitted in terms of landing. So the first issue is the security of the airport itself, and what the protocols are going to be for chartered or commercial planes coming in. That's why it's so important that the U.S. government make sure to secure the capacity for both commercial and charter landings. I think there are planes ranging from 75 to 250, but a lot of that depends on which ones are available and willing to come in. So there's a significant amount, and I can tell you from the philanthropic efforts that have happened, it's just not at the scale of what governments can provide, and the demand is astronomical. So I think, as many have said, the most important thing right now is to make sure that not only the airport is secured and that these types of flights are allowed, but that also the U.S. government commit to protecting that even beyond AMSAT's departures to the point that all of those who can.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Jason. Hey, Jason. Mike Waltz.
Yeah, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I can't. I want to answer the latter part of that on the P2 and P1. One of the things that I am calling on state and the administration to do is on the one hand, we are grateful for rolling out that program in the last few weeks. On the other hand, the requirement to go to a third country and engage the UNHCR there, I believe is onerous and unrealistic. And pressing them to waive that requirement. There are NGOs still in Kabul that could help process, and the UN could even help process there at Kabul Airport. So again, I think there's a number of things that state could do to streamline this process. We made some progress with the Allies Act, and that was tremendous, but there's a number of other things. Time is of the essence, and the P1, P2 requirement to get to Iran, Pakistan, or any of the other stands is one thing that I think would make a big difference.
Just to Mike's point, I totally agree with that. I do think we've made a little bit of progress in the sense that the administration has said in principle they're willing to take people in those categories to third countries to be processed later on. And Secretary Albright mentioned Albania, Kosovo, North Macedonia having offered to take in people in those categories, to be precise. So there is a place to take those people now. I think there's an argument for opening up a U.S. territory as well if we don't have enough offers from third countries. But yeah, the time to be processing paperwork in Afghanistan is past. We have a, and the State Department has a list of those
Thank
people.
You, Tom.
Now.
Yep. So the question from the New York Times was in relation to calls from myself and others on this call since right after the administration's announcement of the withdrawal in April, calls for an evacuation to start. So I'm not going to mince my words on this. We didn't need to be in this position. We didn't need to be seeing the scenes that we're seeing at Kabul Airport with our Afghan friends climbing aboard C-17s. That's why a very broad bipartisan group of us since April have been very clear that we should have started this evacuation months ago. And had we done that, tens of thousands of folks could have been brought to safety. It could have been done deliberately and methodically. And we think that that was a missed opportunity. We certainly have extreme concerns over the late nature in which this evacuation was started. But our call today here is that there's still an opportunity to do the right thing, and that entails holding, securing the airport, and doing so as long as possible to bring out our friends. Anyone else like to address that?
Yeah, very, very quickly, Jason, this is why you, myself, and others were saying that when those last American assets, those military assets, go wheels up, that we are handing these poor people a death sentence. Now those military assets are back. So we get a second chance. And I stand with you. And I'm thrilled with everyone who is really doing the right thing here. But the military assets are back, and they need to be, I'm very interested to see the rules of engagement. Are they going to go outside of Kabul? Are they, you know, what is the agreement understanding with the Taliban? What have they been told, and how long will we keep the air bridge open? I think that's very important for all of us to seek to understand and to press them to do the right thing.
Thank you. Any other comments in that regard? Okay, if not, I'll go to the next question.
Our next question is from the NPR affiliate here in Colorado. And the question is that given the backlog of potentially tens of thousands of SIV eligible applicants, do people on the call want to speak to what are next steps and how we can, the message to people that are still in Afghanistan as your pressure campaign continues?
Yeah, thank you for that question from NPR. The number of options that we have at this point are extremely limited, and that's why our message has been so focused and so clear today in that we have to keep the airport open, we have to secure it, we have to expand that perimeter as much as possible, and we have to control both the military side and the civilian side of that airport so that we can allow both commercial flights, charter flights, and military flights to be coming in simultaneously to get our partners out that we can. After that, we're gonna look at legislation. We're gonna look at what's necessary to streamline and expedite the processing of individuals once we get them to safety, because bottom line is we have to get folks to safety. If folks are not alive, if they do not survive the coming days and weeks, it doesn't matter what our legislative response is because we will not have helped them. So we'll get them the safety. We have to use all available resources to do so. Then we will legislate a streamlining of the process. We will support the administration however we need to make sure that that's expeditious, that it's full, that it's complete, and that the vetting occurs the way that it should. And then we're going to work with our partners like the International Organization of Migration, IRAP, and others to make sure that people are resettled, that they are welcomed into our country as the patriotic new Americans that they are and will be, and that we do the right thing for generations to come. Would anyone else like to address that?
You know, Jason, I have no shortage of words. I just can't. I just can't emphasize enough. Is the Kabul airport the only safe zone that that the administration is prepared to put in place? Throwing your hands up and saying you just have to get there, I don't think is good enough. It wasn't good enough the first time, and it's not good enough now. Are we willing to establish an additional safe zone, perhaps in Kandahar or Herat? To what lengths are the administration willing to go to truly get these people out? And it's worth remembering that President Ford ordered his administration to get the South Vietnamese out and to make Herculean efforts to do so. We now have another bite at that apple. We have three times the number of troops, as Representative Malinowski pointed out. So we have a tremendous capability there, but you know, how far are they willing to go? And I hope they're willing to do what needs to be done to get these to, and for as long as it needs to be done, to take care of our allies.
Thank you, Mike. I think we have time for maybe two more questions. One more question. Said. All right.
Our last question is directed to you, Representative Crow, and the other participants who have served. Do you have a message to veterans of these wars and who served in Afghanistan as you're watching all of this unfold?
Yes, I do. And I appreciate that question very much and the opportunity to address that. I know my colleagues will have things to say as well. This is a very tough time for me and my fellow veterans, as we grapple with the meaning of service, the meaning of our friends and our fallen comrades. But the message for me is very clear. Your service mattered. You stood in that long line of Americans who stood up generation after generation to take the oath and to answer the call when your country called for it. And you should be very proud of that, because we are very proud of it. Because if you hadn't done it, somebody else would have had to have done it in your place. You served honorably, shoulder to shoulder. You protected the man and the woman to your right and your left, and you did what you needed to do.
Jason, can I just add one other piece? It's not necessarily directly an answer to that question, but I think we're probably going to be wrapping up soon. I think there's also a lot, and I'd welcome Representative Malinowski's input here, but in a number of former ambassadors and envoys that I've spoken with, that there's much more we could be doing to leverage the NGO community that's still on the ground in terms of them providing the appropriate initial screening, documentation, assurances, insurance guarantees to at least get over that first hurdle. We've been briefed that, you know, the SIVs alone, much less the broader populace, are getting a 40 to 50% rejection rate before they get chief of mission approval. Once they get past that, it drops down to 2%. But that initial hurdle is backing up at least 9,000 to 10,000 Afghans who are desperate to get out. So I think there's others, that capacity that we could leverage on the ground, and the State Department has it within its authority to do so.
Yeah, that's a great point.
No, go ahead, Tom.
Sure. I mean, the initial screening right now for many of these folks is being done by NGOs, and it's not a security screening. They're not capable of that. It's simply identifying the people who are known to our NGO community to be the human rights leaders in the country, to be the faces of independent journalism in the country, to be the most active and outspoken leaders for women's rights in the country. And there has been a tremendous effort to compile information about those folks, their names, their identifying information, their contact information. And the State Department has all of that. But there's no more screening beyond that that can be done in Afghanistan. I mean, at this point, everybody on that list has to go to the airport and be put on a plane and taken somewhere where the more thorough screening and vetting can be done. And there may be people who slip through the cracks of that process who aren't worthy. And there will certainly be people who are worthy who do not make it. But right now we have to do what we can rather than basically for the sake of consistency, tell everybody in Afghanistan that they're out of luck.
Yeah, Tom, I was referring, I absolutely agree, and that's my understanding as well, but to the SIVs in particular,
yeah.
That, you know, are uploading things into a portal, getting rejections, waiting for months, you know, can't get to the embassy, obviously, now for any kind of follow-on of leveraging those entities on the ground, that particularly the ones outside of Kabul, to help at least with that narrow group as well. So that's something that I think state could do. And I know there are a number of NGOs that are reaching out to us willing and still with folks on the ground willing to do it.
Yep, totally agree. Same principle applies.
Great.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mike. Well, we are at time. If there were more questions that we weren't able to get to, please reach out to my office, Meg Spencer, on my team, and I won't speak for the other representatives, but I can say I'm sure they are happy to field the follow-up outreach as well. So thank you for joining us. We have time to still do the right thing, but we have to do it today. That is our message, so let's get it done. Thank you all for joining.